Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and this is Internet Talk Radio from the west coast of Sweden. We are here on Thursdays and Sundays. You can find us worldwide at redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E creations.com. And we cover news on important, esoteric, upsetting and also uplifting topics. And today we have Ben Stewart with us. He is behind the film Esoteric Agenda. And the film is available right now on Google Video. And we had it featured on Red Ice about a month ago or so. And it has attracted a lot of attention. It's a very nice production. It's a compilation of clips, images with the voiceover. And it deals with some very important topics that we are going to talk more about here today. The website, Ben's website, is talismanicidols.org. Talismanicidols.org, that's a place where you can find a lot more information about the film, and also you can get a copy actually from that website, and we'll be giving out that later in the program as well. So it's great having the producer with us here today to discuss the film and how he got involved in all of this. So Ben Stewart, thanks for coming on the program.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Henrik. I'd like to thank you, obviously, for having me on the show. It's truly an honor. As you just mentioned, your website played a major role in this film reaching the public in the way that it has. I certainly didn't expect it to make it to the point that it has. After it appeared on your homepage, like you were saying, it became popping up, you know, all over the place. I found out only after the fact that it was on Alex Jones' radio show, on his website, his forums, and pretty much just forums all over the world. And I have to attribute a lot of that success to you. So again, thank you.
I'm very glad to hear that, because that's what this is all about, is helping to get the information out. And we always love to encourage when kind of new people, you know, come onto the scene, as it were, and have new information and new perspective on things. And so thank you very much for mentioning that. Do you know at this point how many people have actually watched the film on Video Google?
On Google, I'm not too sure. I actually haven't been keeping up with those numbers too much. I know that it's gotten in upwards of like 2,000 ratings. I know I've probably gotten over, I would say in the past month, I've probably gotten over 2,000 emails. Getting, you know, close to 200 a day. So it's just flooding in, and it keeps picking up as the days go by.
That's interesting. I mean, if you would kind of do a consensus, what generally are the emails about? What kind of questions do you receive?
Well, I would say maybe 25% of them are just comments, people saying that they watched the film, and you know, a lot of it's very uplifting, saying that it truly inspired them because it has the solution section at the end.
Right.
I mean, I get quite a lot of people saying that, I don't know, I get some people, obviously, if you want to say it as hate mail, I get some people that, you know, honestly, they don't like the message of I guess, some of the current modern denominations that these people are so thoroughly, you know, entranced with, that they don't like the message that we have a lot more power than, you know, than we're shown. So I get, you know, I would say maybe 15% of people I get are not too fond of the message, but then the rest of them, they just have, you know, questions on, you know, just little tiny questions on whether some of the programs, how to stop it, you know. And towards the end, obviously, I get into the solutions section, but a lot of these people are taking a very active role in how they can get involved with this and get the word out. And most, I would have to say 75% of most of what I get is very uplifting, and people just asking questions on what they can do to help. I got, I would say, two or three people over in Europe. I think David Icke just had a talk over in Europe just recently, or maybe it's coming up in a couple weeks. I'm not sure, but people have been making T-shirts with talismanicidols.org, and I guess they printed out over 200 different 200 copies of the Esoteric Agenda film that they're handing out there. So I get a lot of people that are taking it upon themselves to try and help and support this. And this is obviously, it's a non-profit film. You can order it off the website. And I just asked for the money to cover shipping and, you know, some of the materials, but it's really good to see that other people are truly helping out and trying to get this word out.
Definitely, and solutions that we're going to dive into that at the end of our first hour, is we're definitely going to focus a little bit on that also. Before we do that, though, Ben, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got involved in these kinds of topics, if you will.
Well, I would say for most of my life, I was born and raised Catholic, and for most of my life, something along those lines really didn't sit right, but other parts of it really did sit right, and I was kind of confused on to, you know, a lot of the specifics with the way I was being raised. So I really, I would say I got into the Eastern philosophies when I was younger. I would say maybe around 12, Taoism was one of the big ones. But really, I was doing a lot of reading, a lot of philosophy, psychology, you know, just generally learning, not with any true ambition of what I was trying to learn. But I would say maybe about 2-3 years ago, I'm also a musician, and I started noticing when I started looking into theory and some of the math behind music notes and things like that, I started realizing that certain things with sound, especially nowadays, had been kind of skewed and kind of perverted in the way that I had noticed that a lot of the modern religious sects have been perverted. So I started asking myself a lot of these questions that a lot of people start asking themselves when they really start researching these things. And then it just came about to where I started realizing that there were, I would say, hidden types of information that you really weren't able to find in a mainstream sense. So I started realizing that there was, I guess you would say, some sort of conspiracy. But I think the number one thing that I got into was the more I searched, the more I felt uplifted instead of felt kind of scared about a lot of these things that were going on a mainstream, you know, large scale. So
yeah,
I would say what really brought me into it was the music, which is an odd way, I guess, to push you into this subject.
So, I mean, was there anything like specific in regards to the music? Because I'm a musician myself, and I find that very interesting. And I guess the really, you know, things began to dawn upon me when I looked at some of the material that I'm forgetting his name now. Obviously he's gone into the healing frequencies. Probably know the name.
Jonathan Goldman, is
no,
it?
No, not Jonathan Goldman. This is he did a lecture on water. The name's gonna pop up here in a minute.
Oh, Dr. Emoto?
No, not Emoto.
No.
Anyway, okay, it's gonna pop up anyway.
Okay.
And he's talked about the frequencies in regards to the ancient solfeggio scale, the solfeggio
notes.
Oh,
Dr. Leonard Horowitz or Dr.
You.
Joseph Pelayo, yeah.
Horowitz, thank you very much. There we go.
Yeah, he wrote the healing codes for the biological apocalypse.
There we go, right. And, I mean, his work was really interesting, and I haven't kind of followed up on it and not have actually, you know, gone to the length to, you know, like, tuning my, you know, instruments to these frequencies, etc. and so forth.
Right.
But was there anything about Horowitz's work that you found interesting in regards to this?
Oh, absolutely. There's actually in my notes, there's actually quite a bit that I get into with this, and that's actually a little bit coming up in the next film that I'll be making. But I do touch upon it in Esoteric Agenda. But yeah, there's especially with the talk that we're going to have today, there's a lot of information I wanted to get into with that, and that kind of leads me back to, this is the kind of information I was finding out that really led me into this this whole field, really.
Right, right. How about the film work then? I mean, you mentioned you have a background in music. Have you a background in working with film beforehand also?
Actually, no, not at all. It was just about a year ago that I would say the reason why I actually pushed myself into doing the film, the reason for the film in the first place was I guess I would see a lot of videos, I would watch a lot of documentaries, I would read a lot of books on this specific subject, and I wouldn't see too much explanation in the solution section of it. And that's really why I spent, you know, a good portion of the end of the film Esoteric Agenda explaining both the scientific and the more spiritual understanding of what these solutions may be, because there's a lot of people out there that touch upon it. You know, we have the David Icke's and people that really talk about the difference between fear and love and how they really work on a day-to-day basis. You know, even the book The Secret and Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, The Law of Attraction, and ways to physically manifest things through thought and consciousness. I found that very interesting, but I wanted to do a little bit more justice in showing people that have a hard time understanding that, showing a little bit more of the raw data that actually even proves that.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of it, actually.
Indeed, indeed. So why don't we kind of dive into the film now then, and if you will, give us kind of an overarching picture, if you will, of what the esoteric agenda is about and where it's leading us, so to speak.
Okay. Well, the film itself is about 2 hours long, and it's just packed full of information. But the film takes the viewer through a brief overview of ancient civilizations who prophesize about end times, shifts of consciousness, and the very time frame that we're living today, which I think that is quite interesting enough, just the time frame that we're living. So, I mean, it's been talked about for thousands of years. Obviously, the Mayas, the Incas, the Aztecs, the Toltecs, the even in the current, you know, New and Old Testament, we see a lot of this talk about this time frame. So I found that rather interesting.
Yeah.
But these were cultures that were fascinated and obedient, you know, not only to stars and galactic cycles, but to time in general. And that plays a big role in the beginning of the film, where they understood that the effects of the cycles of time on consciousness and on the body. The Mayans, obviously, in their Mesoamerican sunstone, their calendar had amazingly sophisticated calendars and depictions of, on the sunstone calendar, depictions of the forces that control specific tunes like back tunes and cat tunes, these little measurements of time, and the forces that usher in new ages. So time was extremely important to, you know, a lot of these civilizations, even the Egyptians. You know, the Egyptians truly began what we now have as the solar calendar, and the 12 months the way that we have them now. And we start seeing a huge separation. I mean, throughout the years, we started seeing a huge separation from natural law, natural time, I should say.
Right.
And time was also something, this was actually another part of this was in the Dr. Leonard Harwit's book, The Healing Codes of the Biological Apocalypse. Time was also something that was very congruent with the body. There was a relationship between time and the body, and the clocks and the calendars that were natural and innate within us, we began getting, you know, separated with that. We began to lose our connection and our relationship with time and began looking at it as something external, something outside the body, like a boss that we have to obey, and that something that we had no relationship with.
Yeah.
You know, and this isn't, you know, not all of these things are insidious, you know, and evil within themselves, but the implications are obviously, you know, quite tremendous. I should say that not all of this is evil, obviously, but it's been found that the Roman clock was, and this was in the book that I was mentioning, the Roman clock was developed by the Venetians and the Germans, and they standardized the beginning of the day, which right now is midnight as we have it. That's when the day, you know, turns into the next day as right. we have now.
Right.
However, according to the Roman Catholic Church archives, I think it was Genesis, let me see my notes, Genesis 1:5 and John 11:9, they mentioned that the days used to begin at what is now 6 p.m.
That's right.
And Dr. Leonard Harwitz, you know, with that book I was talking about, he has shown that this has a kind of a detrimental effect on left and right brain function, which is very important, and I'll return to that a bit later in the program. But there's also evidence supporting where the recycling of the years that we now have on January 1st was actually the summer solstice. So the recycling of their days and the recycling of their years happened during the, you know, the points where the sun was up in the sky and the sun was the highest in the northern hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And now we start it at, you know, in the middle of the night and in the winter. So there's some symbolism there, and I'll get back to that. But from there, the film brings you through paganism, you know, that's rampant in a lot of our monotheistic religions today. I don't have time to get really into the examples, obviously, but you can find extraordinary work on this through even Jordan Maxwell. A lot of Jordan Maxwell's work gets into the astrotheology,
yeah,
and a lot of a lot of the astrology that's in the religions that we have today. And I encourage everyone to look into Jordan Maxwell's work. It's really inspiring.
Indeed.
It then moves you through the key players. The film moves you through like some of the key players in the bloodlines that have really moved quietly through the ages and all the upper echelons of society that we have. You know, these select few people have seemed to emerge on the top of corporations and media and banking and government all the time that we see. Now, we're even seeing pop culture icons ushering in new fashions. Elvis Presley, I didn't find this out till just about a year ago, that Elvis Presley is actually has a bloodline relation to Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And you can find great information on the aristocratic families and where they came from and where they've gone through Burke's Peerage. I'm not sure if it's biannual or if it's annual literature that they put out, but others such as Eustace Mullins, and there's quite a lot of people that get into the bloodlines. Also, Fritz Springmeier had a book, The 13 Illuminati Bloodlines.
Yeah.
But what's shown in these aristocratic families, you know, is that really they've never lost power. They just seem to have either changed names and just moved into different areas. But again, you know, the film moves you through that, and then we have particular pagan dates, and the film gets into this. Pagan dates that align perfectly with modern political and military events. I think we have Waco and Oklahoma City bombings, which were both on April 19th. I think Waco was in 92 and Oklahoma City bombing was in 95. David Icke wrote in a book, The Biggest Secret, that April 19th was a pagan ritual holiday, a holiday where sacrifice of children was made by fire. So in Waco, we have the Branch Davidians. You know, we find children who were burnt, you know, men, women, and children who were burned alive. And, you know, this was really no suicide cult. You know, I include live footage showing that the military tanks deployed to these scenes, punching holes in the walls, you know, in equidistant locations for better airflow, so the fire would run a little bit more rampant. And instead of rounds of ammunition, the tanks actually had flamethrowers at the end of them. And, you know, anyone who'd like to believe that, you know, this is unfounded evidence would, you know, do very well to know that all this was caught on camera.
Yeah.
Like, all of this is there's footage of this. Yet the official report was filed, obviously, that, you know, the Branch Davidians committed mass suicide, setting themselves on fire. So, and then the Oklahoma City bombing, I don't want to get too far into all the evidence behind this, but even in the film, I show, I would say, about 6 or 7 news clips of people on the day of saying that there were multiple bombs found, some undetonated within the building. So
right.
It's kind of odd to find that the official report was that this was a fertilizer bomb parked out in front, you know, and the method of one person, when there's explosive experts talking about how, you know, these were highly sophisticated bombs.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been done by just, you know, just some random person. So, and there's a lot of other things around that date, April 19th. You know, we find the Columbine shooting, which was just a day afterward, involving children.
Yeah.
And we have this is a loose. What's that?
Yeah, I just want to mention even Virginia Tech is very close around
April 16th.
Yeah.
And that's these are actually young adults in Virginia Tech, but if you think about it, it's not too off from the age of the Columbine children. I mean, it's a college, so they must have been 17, 18 years old, or 18, 19 maybe. So, you know, that's right around that one date, obviously. And then we have all the links with Princess Diana's death, August 31st, which was said to be the mirror or the reverse of the day of Hecate. Where she crashed into the 13th pillar of the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, and what that supposedly symbolizes is the death of the goddess Diana. And, yeah, you know, same name, which is quite interesting right there.
Yeah, indeed.
Obviously, I mean, there's parallels between the Lincoln and the Kennedy assassinations. Not sure if you've heard any of them.
Well, I actually had that up on the website a while back. We don't need to go over all of them right now. But, I mean, it's very interesting, and it really kind of shows that either there's something, you know, really weird going on, or this is highly controlled, you know, and we can, you know, right. speculate on what that is and so forth, but it's very interesting nonetheless, you know.
Right, yeah, and I mean, this is just information pretty much. It's just, you know, I'm not trying to persuade anybody of this or that, but, you know, like, obviously when you look into a lot of these synchronicities and a lot of the, you know, these parallels, especially like with the pagan dates and, you know, these links, it's kind of one of those things that you can either call it a coincidence or, you know, you can come to your own conclusion in your mind. But, you know, the film is really about just getting the information out there to, you know, to the people that might not be aware of these things.
Right, right.
So, I mean, there's parallels between the dates of September 11th and and I guess October 7th, the date that we invaded Afghanistan, mm-hmm. there's actually a program about the Mayan calendar dates where September 11th was the date of 6 Emox in the Mayan calendar date, which represents large-scale upheaval and unbalancing when September or October 7th, the date we invaded Afghanistan, was 6 K, which represents balancing. You know, coincidence maybe, I don't know.
Right.
But then you have March 20th of 2003 when the U.S. invaded Iraq for 2 days. There was large-scale bombings held all over Baghdad, which happened to be the date of the Eve of Ostara. That's a pagan ritual known as the Day of Feast, I believe it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're believed to be, what was it, that war ended on May 1st, which was Beltane or May Day, mm-hmm. you know, known to the Druids. And just like a lot of these parallels that, you know, I go into this a lot more in the film, so, you know, I'm not going to try and go over all of it today, but obviously just watch the film and just, you know, make up your own mind. Just these are things that you can honestly look up for yourself right on the internet. It takes you 5 minutes to see how a lot of these, you know, pagan dates line up with a lot of things that are going on in today's day and age. So it's something that, you know, the listeners can really find out for themselves if they want. But the film then brings you through a lot of the UN programs that we're facing now. Mm-hmm. And obviously we know a lot about the UN. I don't have to get too far into everything surrounding the UN, but first of all, Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, it's called, is something, you know, everyone should be looking into a bit more if they're not familiar with it. There's a thing called the Wildlands Project, and this is something that, you know, obviously right now I'm just talking about how it affects the United States, but it's a UN program, obviously, from a global to local level. So
right.
if you look into, especially around where I am, they don't call it Agenda 21 or Sustainable Development. I'm failing to remember what they actually call it, but they call it by a different name,
mm-hmm.
but it all goes back to basically the Agenda 21 or Sustainable Development Movement. And the Wildlands Project that they're proposing is disgusting, really. It's I think it's around 50% of the U.S. land they're proposing to give back to nature in a way,
mm-hmm.
with no admittance to human life. There's a map that I show, and I think it was Dr. Eric Shaw or Michael Shaw, I believe it is,
yeah.
out in Santa Cruz, that did a speech on all of this, and he showed the map showing that, you know, the amount of land that's going to be off limits to human life, and then the amount of land that's going to be highly controlled, you know, limited to highly controlled operations for human, you know, human interaction, whatever. And then there's little tiny black specks on it. You know, you look at the map and you'll be amazed at these little tiny black specks that are supposed to be the mega cities.
Hmm.
These constructed where people are supposed to be stacked and packed into these tiny housing units with supposedly jobs assigned and children cared for by the state.
Right.
And, I mean, if that's not an Orwellian state, I don't know what is.
That's and, right.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
And I get a lot of emails asking if I truly believe that, you know, these things will actually happen, because
mm-hmm.
yeah, you know, I mean, there's a possibility that they might not be put through, but I mean, in my opinion, I think that my opinion on these things, on the likelihood of this happening, is of little importance. You know, I mean, we're missing the bigger picture here. Why is such a powerful organization, such powerful people involved with the UN even coming up with such programs?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's what we should be asking ourselves. I mean, Because the next one is the clincher, Codex Alimentarius.
Oh, yeah.
This is another one I've received a lot of emails about, saying that people just are not buying into it. You know, they truly don't think that it'll ever happen. Codex Alimentarius is an offshoot proposed by the FAO and the WHO, and you know, it's to control all the nation's foods and supplement consumption. And this program calls for global implementation. I think they said it was in the 80s where they called for the global implementation in December 31st, 2009,
yeah,
which is, you know, just, you know, a year and a half away right now. But the plan, what they're planning to do is outlaw vitamins and minerals on the basis that they're toxins in a way. And, you know, they plan to enforce injection of every dairy cow on the planet with Monsanto's recombinant bovine injection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, which, by the way, if you're not familiar with Monsanto, I'm sure, you know, much of you listeners probably are, but the evil that surrounds Monsanto, just go and research that on your own. That and that in itself is amazing.
Yeah.
But under Codex, along with every dairy cow, every animal used for human consumption on the planet has to be injected with subclinical antibiotics, which is, you know, in a sense, this is just pesticides for animals. And, you know, like, then you get into the whole problem with the pesticides in the foods. But then genetic manipulated food will become really what the standard of food is what we'll have. And that's scary enough on its own. But, I mean, genetic manipulation to food scrambles, obviously, it scrambles the genetic structure,
yeah,
that we need to survive. You know, quick science lesson here, but our natural organic bodies need natural organic food in its unaltered state. It's obvious, you know, otherwise we get inorganic ailments. We get cancer and these other preventable diseases that we're seeing a lot nowadays.
Yeah.
But I would say just in the past month, I've received about 500 emails from people who specifically telling me that all this sounds way too difficult to believe, and that, you know, the WHO and the FAO projections that they themselves released to the public stated that the vitamin and mineral ban alone should cause an upwards of 3 billion deaths, 3 billion, like half the planet. And these aren't my words. These aren't anyone who's against Codex words. It's the WHO, FAO projections that they themselves released. So, I mean, that right there sounds strikingly close to the agenda of what you would call population reduction.
Well, it is, and even, what was it, even 1 billion they project through starvation as a consequence of the banning also?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, just through simple starvation. And, yeah, if you watch the film, I use a lot of clips from the film the speech Nutricide. Rima Lebo, I think it was her name, that was the physician that was talking about this. But the 2 billion, the 1 billion deaths just through simple starvation of the of what Codex Alimentarius is wishing to impose. But the other 2 billion that they're talking about obviously is going to be from preventable diseases, because I mean, we should all know this by now that vitamins and minerals, they prevent diseases a lot more than what you would get out of garlic or echinacea. But that actually brings me to my next point. A lot of these natural healthcare products, Henrik, have you heard about what has just been proposed on April 8th in Canada?
No.
The C-51 bill?
No, tell me about it.
Okay, well, just 1 month ago, there's April 8th. It hasn't passed yet, but it's gotten through 3 readings so far. I have some notes on this I'd actually like to share. What the C-51 bill is actually looking to do in Canada right now is to outlaw over 70% of all natural health care products, and the rest are to be for prescription use only. And, some of these products, that they're looking to outlaw are such as garlic, dandelion greens, bottled water. Bottled water. Yeah, bottled water. I mean, I truly fail to know what, you know, any excuse that they could come up with for outlawing bottled water,
yeah,
or any of these natural food products or supplements for that.
Well,
I
can understand in that sense if there were to go to the extent to say, okay, bottled water actually affects the climate in the end because of transportation from the water,
right,
the source, etc., etc. Okay, a little bit I can understand of that, but garlic, come on.
Garlic and dandelion greens, and there's more. I mean, 70% of all natural healthcare products, and the rest, you know, and they're to be outlawed, and the rest are, you know, close to all the rest are supposedly going to be for prescription use only. And, you know, it makes sense on a couple different levels, but Big Pharma, obviously, you know, they don't like the, you know, a lot of these products, they don't have the FDA approval. So, you know, that's obviously one reason why they're not too happy with this. But then you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture of what Codex Alimentarius is really doing. It's just another form of control, because obviously, you know, the control of food, it's a necessity. So, you know, it's obviously another form of control. But, you know, one of the stipulations of this bill, the C-51 bill, is that if it were to be passed, it will remove democratic oversight. It bypasses elected officials so they can vote laws in and allow bureaucrats to adopt laws from other countries without the consent of the people. So removing all democratic oversight.
Really?
And now the they that I'm talking of is the FDA and Codex Alimentarius. So some of the legal punishments, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, inspectors will be allowed to enter private property. Mind you that I said inspectors, not law enforcement.
Right.
They will be able to enter private property without a warrant, take any property at their discretion, dispose of it at will, not reimburse any of the losses, seize bank accounts, charge owners shipping and storage for the property that they stole, hold seized property indefinitely, levy fines up to $5 million, and seek 2 years in jail time for each individual incident.
Yeah.
Each incident.
Right.
So, I mean, anyone who's mistaken in thinking that, you know, the government truly cares about the well-being of the people, please tell me what good comes, you know, from all of this. It comes from banning 70% of natural healthcare products.
Okay, so give us the overview of this again. C-51, it's called, and is this...
It's called the C-51 bill. It's passed three readings right now.
Right.
And,
And what will happen if it goes through in Canada? You said that it can be implemented in other countries without some kind of a poll or a referendum.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, let me get into that. For those of you who are thinking that this really doesn't have anything to do with anybody outside of Canada, just think of what Bush and Bush, Fox, and Martin signed in 2005. You know, I believe it was called the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's the North American Union that we're looking at right now. And think of the fact that the people had no input whatsoever on that being signed. You know, they're using the threat of terrorism to assist this Trojan horse pretty much into our backyards with the North American Security Act.
Right.
They're working to break down sovereign borders with a superhighway. Right now it's being constructed. It's called the Trans-Texas Corridor.
That's right. Yeah, the National Highway.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of the channel that connects England to Europe, which, you know, was pretty much, in my estimate, it was essential for the European Union. And, I mean, most of all this, you know, just take a look at the FDA's, the Trilateral Cooperation Charter, it's called. The FDA is using this thing called the Trilateral Cooperation Charter to engage in conferencing with Canada and Mexico for the purpose of creating one set of harmonized food and drug regulations for all three countries with zero input from the citizens of those three countries.
Hmm.
So that right there. And I've received a lot of emails from people who are trying to – they actually – you know, I sent a lot of newsletters out about how I'm doing this interview, and got a lot of people from Canada emailing me on trying to get some of the information out on how this can be stopped, because – Obviously, they say there's a lot of like roadblocks. There's a lot of places that are set up to make it look like, you know, you can sign a petition and send it here and look like it'll help. But I can't remember the person's name, but the president of the Codex Alimentarius, he receives all these emails and he just deletes them, pretty much ignores all the petitions and everything like that. And there's other things out on the internet right now that will. It's pretty much just a distraction for people to get involved with when it really has no help. So really, I mean, all they're saying you can do with this is pretty much contact your local senators and congressmen about pretty much signing a petition saying no to the Trilateral Cooperation Charter. That's for anybody who's really in North America, but the only people who can really petition the C-51 bill itself are those citizens of Canada, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to ask you, you know, what you consider to be I mean, you mentioned control, obviously, and we have in the background to all of this, we have the idea of population reduction going in, but this is also another, as far as I see it, another factor involved here in regards to controlling everything that is natural, controlling nature and things like this. What do you consider to be the main purpose behind that? Do you have an idea or a theory about that at all?
Well, I mean, there's obviously there's the obvious. It's to maintain control, because if you look at a lot of the key players behind a lot of this, it's the same people that are setting up a monopoly in every facet, whether it be media monopoly, whether it be just corporations, you know, becoming corporate America and close to, you know, basically corporate Earth. You're seeing the monopoly in the control in those things. So that's the control of the dissemination of information that reaches the public. Mm. And then, you know, that's obviously one, you know, key element in the empowering people. But then you have things like food, obviously. And, you know, the next step would be controlling the air that we, you know, the very air that we breathe. But food itself, obviously, you need it to live. So Codex Alimentarius, what they're talking about is global implementation.
Yeah.
For, you know, December 31st, 2009. And really, I mean, obviously, this is very symbolic of what we're getting into, what's known as the one world government, this new world order that's supposedly trying to be implementing itself. And obviously, with a cashless society and a microchipped population that a lot of people are getting into and talking about now, it's just another form of having complete and utter control. That way, it's kind of like what you see with people now giving all their responsibility away to the insurance companies, or giving all the responsibility away to the government, and not taking responsibility for themselves. They're allowing themselves to, you know, when they leave home at the age of 18 or whenever they leave, they leave their parents behind, the parents that they used to run to fix everything, and they think they're free, and then all of a sudden they don't realize that symbolically what all they did was they replaced it with this, you know, the insurance companies and the government and everything else that they run to in the same fashion that they used to run to their parents for money, support, help, anything. So it's kind of just showing that there's growing older, but there's very little growing up going on.
indeed.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's so much more to mention about this, to touch upon, and we'll definitely need to go there in the second segment, but in the 15 or so minutes we have left in this first segment, do you want to go into a little bit about these solutions and things like that? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, to touch base on a little bit of like the scientific way of understanding how nature and how nature should affect us and how unnatural things do affect us. I mean, there's amazing scientific research right now that backs up all of these statements on what like talismans are. Talismans are how color and sound and symbols and catchphrases and archetypes and how all these things affect us on a subconscious level. So, you know, to truly wake up, you know, being one of the solutions, just having, you know, a mass awakening, getting people to wake up to these things, is obviously to understand some of these more like symbolic and subconscious ways of control,
right,
such as the talismans. And I mean, just to show a little bit of scientific research showing how colors, just colors themselves, affect the body. Colors are literally just vibrations of sound. They're higher and more rapid of a frequency on the frequency scale. So these sound vibrations, they become inaudible, and then eventually they get detected with our eyes. They're picked up by more highly tuned instruments that are our eyes. And for instance, the cones in our eyes, they vibrate it at a frequency of like 500 billion cycles per second just to perceive the color yellow. Mm. And even red is 400 billion cycles per second to perceive that color. So then you see a lot of those colors in fast food restaurants, because what they literally do is they'll slightly increase the heart rate, slightly increase the metabolism, and it makes people want to eat quicker and then leave quicker, such as fast food. And then you see the polar opposite of that. You see the more calm, cool, natural colors, the blues, the greens, the browns, you know, the very soft colors in the fine dining restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
So colors used very hypnotically in the media, you know, in advertising and absolutely everything. And the science behind it is when the color passes through the pupil, that signal is sent to the hypothalamus, which affects the neurotransmitters in our brains, the enzyme and hormone production, as well as like a whole other slew of physiological functions in our body.
Right.
So literally color, I mean, I don't know if people pick up on this, but color truly affects the physiological function of our enzymes and hormones and neurotransmitters, and it can bring about, you know, hormones, obviously, it brings about specific emotions sometimes.
Yeah.
So this is precisely why colors in advertising use so carefully. You have sound, you know, and the beat of music today, like a lot of pop songs, you know, are around 72 beats per minute because it feels good because it's right in line with the average heartbeat. So, you know, and you have archetypes that, you know, we're seeing a lot today, like the Animus, the Big Daddy, the, you know, in our so-called leaders, these strong archetype figures that, you know, that if you don't understand archetypes, like going back and looking into a lot of Carl Jung's work, if you don't understand the archetypes, it's something that's played on us on a subconscious level that we're not truly understanding.
Oh, yeah. And that's also, I think, a lot of the I mean, in a sense, when you look at all of this and take it together, you also see that we are participating in this control that is ongoing, and we are willingly, so to speak, you know, letting them control us. And this is, I think, that the archetype that you're talking about here is a big part of that. In a sense, mm-hmm. people are they are craving for that, you know, domination, dominating force above them, the you know, the Uber father or what have you, you know,
yes.
that dominating force. So that's very important to also recognize that if people have that inherently within themselves, that they're craving this, obviously we're going to get it, you know.
Absolutely.
You know.
I'm glad you said that, because that really just brings me into my next point. Archetypes, obviously, they're universal patterns that pretty much everybody follows. And when you look into mythology and even in religion, all the allegory surrounding it, a lot of it has to do with archetypes showing a very symbolic way that people react with the outside world around them. Archetypes are very important in this. And I mean, this is where I really want to jump into the solutions, because everything I mention here, you know, about this this esoteric agenda, all the way from, what is it, humanity's departure from natural time, like we said in the beginning, mm-hmm. the pagan rituals behind, you know, all the political agendas, the elite bloodlines, the UN programs that are trying to destroy our freedoms, they can all be negated in a heartbeat. And it's very simple, but it's also very difficult for, you know, for some people to understand in this day and age. I mean, the most difficult thing for modern left-brain, logical, rational thinkers is to understand that there's truly nothing that is happening in this world. Like you were just saying, there's nothing that is happening in this world that we are not doing to ourselves.
Right.
And this is where, you know, many people get confused, because, you know, they want hardcore physical action. You know, they want to do something outward and external. You know, they want to sign a petition or debate politics or spread the word about Ron Paul or demonize the UN.
Right.
You know, anything that has to do with creating a revolution, something external, something that people can follow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what people want. You know, what these people don't understand is that they're really just not facing themselves on a personal level. You know, they consistently have to create a leader or something that they can follow, this hero archetype or the teacher or the healer or any type of, you know, external thing, anything that gives them an excuse not to put their responsibility within them, but to put it into somebody else.
There you go.
So because that way it gives them a little bit of relief. If the outside world of, you know, the outside world of unexpected changes and random events and things like that, If that ever lets them down, they don't have to suffer, because they always have a fall boy. They have a scapegoat. They can blame it on whatever they were following, and it's not their fault.
That's
and,
right.
And the reason why it's so difficult for people to understand how quantum physics and metaphysics, like these new age sciences, it explains that we're all connected. with you know, a web of consciousness, this supreme intelligence, is because people don't realize that the intelligence that this is really postulating, it isn't always defined by something that can be applied to human intelligence. You know, we have this, you know, innate, you know, strive to try and anthropomorphize everything and make it seem like, well, intelligence has to be something that I can recognize, you know, by my own intelligence.
Just look at religion, what they're doing, you know, they're anthropomorphizing everything, all the deities mm-hmm. around, you know, they're putting a face on it in order to, identify with that and project yourself onto the hero or, you know, the archetype, right. Whatever it might be, you know, so, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, and that's a common misunderstanding, is that when you talk about the intelligence of the Earth and you talk about the intelligence of the universe and this, you know, this matrix that's pretty much pervading all of existence, it's a type of intelligence that maybe you don't really understand because you're looking at it in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, how does pollen know to use the fuzz on the bee's thorax and the abdomen of a bee to spread to other areas?
Right.
You know, how do seeds inside fruit know how to use the animals to spread to other areas? Like, this is a type of intelligence that is within nature, and sometimes it seems so simple that people don't want to call it. It seems like an insult to people, you know, to call that intelligence. But it truly is.
Right, and we've also been given a kind of a, what I will call a false explanation almost, because science now tells us in many cases how it's being done, but it never tells us why it's being done. You know, what is the will behind something? Why does it even work? You know, what's the driving force here? You know, that's the important question, I think, at least.
Oh, exactly, absolutely. And I'm gonna try and skip past a lot of this because there's a lot more information that I don't think we have time to get into right here. There's something I want to say about more of the hardcore raw data that we have,
right?
To explain a lot of this. So, for those who need this evidence and this raw data, I mean, look at what our elder civilizations called the sacred circuit. There's this thing called the sacred circuit where our cells, all the way down to our cells, it responds to an electromagnetic pulse given off by our brain, which comes from our heart, which comes from the core of the Earth, which from then it's said to come from the solar system, then the galaxy, and then ultimately the universe. So there's this supposedly this pulse that it goes from the macrocosm to the microcosm, you know, absolutely through everything. But let's just focus on the Earth for right now. This Schumann resonance is called the base resonant frequency of the Earth. You know, it's been steady at around 8 cycles per second for as long as it's been recorded. It was a constant thing that even it was so constant that cutting-edge militaries around the world used that frequency for radio communications.
Right.
And in 1986 and 87, right around the time where there was what's known as the harmonic convergence on Earth,
mm-hmm.
there was this pulse of the Earth began increasing rapidly. And by now, it's sitting around, I think it's around 12 cycles per second. And if you do the math, right around December 21st, 2012, getting into that whole prophecy, by the time that rolls around, it's supposed to be sitting right around 13 cycles per second, and that's right in line with the Fibonacci sequence. The Fibonacci sequence 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, where each number is the sum of the previous two numbers. Supposedly, this governs everything in nature, the Fibonacci sequence. It governs the spiral pattern of leaves around on a plant. To get the maximum amount of sunlight, measurements such as the forking of lightning, the branching pattern on trees, the branching patterns on the roots of the trees, even our own bodies are subject to this sequence, the math behind the Fibonacci sequence. And the reason why this is important, this going from 8 cycles per second to 13 cycles per second, is I'm sure you've heard of what cymatics is.
Yeah, Hans Jenny was behind
Hans
that.
Jenny in the 1940s or 50s, I believe it was.
Yeah.
If you were to type in cymatics in on YouTube or Google videos, they have like really amazing videos on this. you know, where you'll see what sound frequencies, especially the notes on the white keys of the piano, mm-hmm. when those frequencies are passed through a malleable form of matter, such as like sand or water or something like that, it moves the particles of the matter into sacred geometrical shapes. And when the frequency is increased, the pattern becomes more complex. So obviously this, you know, this sound, what sound does to matter, this is actually what our body is composed of. Because our body is nothing but matter, and it's composed, and pretty much everything that we see around us is composed of matter and the dance that it has with sound. Like this really like ingenious, you know, relationship between sound and matter. It's really what makes up all of existence right now.
Yeah.
But and the reason why this is important, this could sort of foreshadow what the great shift in either matter or consciousness or whatever that is talked about in nearly all the ancient scriptures.
Right.
And
right.
I try not to prophesize personally or theorize about, you know, what will happen. I just let the experts on these matters, you know, both of present and past times, I let them do the talking. But like I was saying, what I do know is that the true nature of sound, you know, and matter has been just as perverted as modern religions. This is what we were talking about in the beginning.
Right.
And I don't know if I have time to get into that right now.
You know what? We'll do like this. We'll round things off here for our first segment. We have a minute or two left here, and then we'll get into it in the next segment. We're going to continue talking more with Ben Stewart in our member section, and I have tons more questions and loads of stuff I want to get into, so that's going to be very interesting. But if you will, tell us a little bit about your website and how people can get a copy of the film, etc., and whatever you want to leave us with here in the first segment.
Okay. Well, the website, like you said, is talismanicidols.org. It's talismanicidols.org. So if you go to that, I'm still in the process of updating and putting some more information on there. There's in the links section, I'm starting to put a lot more references and a lot more things that I find that are really relevant to what's going on, that it really pushes the envelope of what's said in the film Esoteric Agenda. But again, the film itself, it's available for purchase. It's a non-profit film, but it's still going to be around $8, you know, worldwide, basically to you know, get a little bit of the shipping costs and everything and helped out with that. But I really encourage people to buy a copy and then make as many copies as possible and hand out. You know, there's absolutely no problem with that. And really, I would just like to say that I don't know, that there's so many other people out there right now. Obviously, you have a lot on your show that, you know, you do interviews with, you know, the Michael Tesarians, which, you know, I highly recommend everybody listen to if you haven't already. You know, Jordan Maxwell's, David Icke, Greg Braden, obviously, gets into what we were just talking about, the merge between science and spirituality. It's beautiful. If you want to look into a lot of his work, it's just absolutely amazing, and there's so much information out there, and I just try to do the best I can to try and compile it and show a big picture and let people themselves make up their own minds.
Very good, and I think you've done a beautiful job with the film. So those of you who haven't seen it, pop on over to talismanicidols.org and check it out. It's well worth your time, and as Ben said, it's a compilation of many things, and many different researchers and so forth are talking in the film. So highly recommended, and it's very nice. So stay with us, Ben Stewart, and we'll take a short break here, but we'll continue talking more in the member section.